Coming up on episode number 450, it's a supersized edition of Coverville with interviews with some of the most popular cover bloggers on the internet. We'll answer some of those burning cover song questions and hear some tunes. It's all coming up right now on Coverville.
Just getting rougher, cover me. Come on, baby, cover me. Well, I'm looking for a woman who would come on in and cover me.
Greetings from Coverville for a Thursday night. It's April 17th, 2008. My name is Brian Ibbett. Welcome to another edition of Coverville, a cover blog roundtable discussion. Now, for the 450th show, I wanted to do something a little bit different, and I had a discussion with some of the most popular cover bloggers on the web. I was thinking about this. If you wanted to find out more about movies, you'd probably talk to Roger Ebert or Martin Scorsese or someone along those lines. If you want to learn more about skateboarding, you'd seek out Tony Hawk and have him answer all of your burning questions. But who are the experts on cover songs? Well, tonight you're going to meet some of them and hear their opinions on theories and trends of cover songs via a Skype roundtable. Let's jump right into it. Starting to my left, Joshua is the creator of Cover Laydown, a blog started in September 2007 that focuses on folk music. In his real life, he's a teacher and folk festival organizer. Please welcome Joshua. How you doing, Joshua?
Hello. Hey, Joshua.
Hi.
All right. If you're a fan of Disney covers, you probably have something in common with Curtis, who runs Covering the Mouse. In his real life, he works with an after-school program for underprivileged kids in Vancouver. Welcome, Curtis. How are you?
Hey, Brian. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And you know, just like my show, if I stumble all over my words, I'm going to leave it in. All right. Jamie is the creator of Fong Songs, an MP3 blog that started in August 2005. While Fong Songs specializes in cover songs, it goes beyond the cover and tackles new indie artists such as She and Him and even the very rare non-musical post.
Hey, Brian.
Welcome, Jamie. Steve started Cover Freak back in October 2006 and has been very consistent in not only keeping up with posts, but usually providing a theme to the songs he introduces us to. Welcome, Steve.
Steve?
Is Steve here?
Uh-oh.
Can we pretend Steve. We're Steve?
All right, we'll give him a second to jump back in. If not, I'll... There he is.
Hi, it's my pleasure to be here.
Good to have
Sorry,
you.
I cleared my throat. I hit the mute button and didn't unmute myself.
All right. And
I try that again? Take two?
Oh, no. Heck, we'll keep that in. Are you kidding? This is the excitement of podcasting and radio. And Liza is easily the one out of all of us who's been doing this the longest. She's the force behind Copyright, blogging since March 2004 from her home in Chicago. In her spare time, she spends a lot of time watching The Real World. Welcome, Liza.
What up, nerds?
All right, so welcome, everybody. What we'll do is we'll just kind of go around. I've got a bunch of questions here contributed by you guys as well as a few that came from listeners, and we're going to just kind of nail down some big, long-burning questions about cover songs and then talk about some great ways to introduce music to our listeners, as we've all been doing for months and years here. First up, let's get the big question out of the way, which is identifying a cover song, or kind of the criteria for a cover song. For example, when Eric Clapton originally did Layla as part of Derek and the Dominoes and then did a new version of it for the MTV Unplugged, some people do consider that a cover, some others don't. Let me get your take around it, and what we'll do is I'll start with Joshua, and then kind of work down the line here. So, Joshua, what's your take on that?
I'm going to have to go first every time, aren't I?
If you would not like that, let me know.
No, it just means afterwards I'm going to be scratching my head going, gee, I wish I could have said that, and I wish I could have said that. That's fine.
You know what? I have a way of rotating around, so
fair
we'll start
enough.
You with this one.
I'm going to take the easy way out here. I don't think you can be involved in a cover of your own song unless it's purely after the fact. I mean, I think there's a couple of examples out there where someone was called in to do backup vocals in a session for a song they originally recorded. I'll take that as a cover. But I don't think I was going to, I don't think I'd count this one.
Mm-hmm. Liza, how about this? What's your take on it?
I feel similarly. I mean, yeah, if you know, 20 years later, you know, somebody's covering your song and invites you in, and, you know, they're doing something really new with it, then yeah. But, you know, singing this, a song that you wrote and performed originally with a different band or, you know, on a different album, you know, a few years later, to me, it's your work. It's not, to me, I don't, especially in the, when we're talking about something like Layla, it's an Eric Clapton song to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's a Derek and the Domino song, but, you know, we know who wrote it. We're talking also about somebody who, you know, everybody knows this song. Everybody knows Eric Clapton. It's always going to be identified to him. So it's there's no way that I would ever consider that a cover.
Good. How about you, Steve?
Oh, me too. I don't think that it's possible to cover your own song. And, you know, if someone brings you in as a side man, if they're covering your song and they want you to, you know, lay down that hot guitar lick or something, that's fine because it's a cover of, you know, it's somebody else covering your song. But if, and again, you know, Layla is just like a great example.
It's an iconic example. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And no, there's no way that's a cover. There are many other ways to describe it, but cover is not one of them.
Well, Curtis and Jamie, before I get to you, let me throw another wrinkle in here so maybe I can get a dissenting opinion here. But let's say an artist, or let's say a songwriter writes a song, but they're not the original performer. And then they do record a version of it later. Does that fall under the same criteria? If they don't, maybe they don't release the song, but they are the first to, even if it's in a private sense, perform it. Does it still fall into the non-cover arena? And then we'll continue with you, Curtis.
Yeah, I think it. I think the if a writer is writing the song for an artist, but the artist is the original writer. I mean, sorry, I'm getting, I just got a little message here from Joshua, which is totally distracting me.
Is Joshua telling you to disagree?
No.
I sent a psychic message. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What was I saying here? I think that if someone writes a song for an artist and that artist performs it first, that's not a cover of the writer's song. That's still their song. Like, I don't think Britney Spears wrote any of her songs. I wouldn't call her a cover artist because all of the songs on her first album are not written by her. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a good point.
Answer your question.
That's a very good point. Jamie, how about you?
I still have to say they're, well, like the Britney example kind of threw me there, but it's true. She's not a cover artist, but when I was thinking when you asked the question was about like Mott the Hoople, like all the young dudes.
Oh, yeah.
David Bowie wrote that, but his version, I think, came out later. But I still don't consider David Bowie the cover. Mm-hmm. I think if you wrote it, yeah, like being involved in that original song, even if you're not performing it, I don't know, I have a hard time considering that a cover.
I think sometimes, though, the popularity of, you know, the artists get in the way of how you can look at it, because, like, I think about a song like Red Rubber Ball that, you know, Paul Simon wrote, that The Circle did initially. Mm-hmm. And to me, whenever I hear Red Rubber Ball covered, I think, oh my gosh, it's, you know, they're covering The Circle, because to me that's kind of the quintessential version. It's my favorite version. And but, you know, as time has worn on, you know, there was the Live in Central Park album where you know, Simon and Garfunkel did record that. So then it comes to pass that almost everybody, because of the fame of Simon and Garfunkel, you know, that version's more popular because more people have that album. And, you know, maybe people don't remember this one hit wonder band from the 60s.
Right.
So,
right.
That's really neat. It gets, that's where it gets tricky, because, you know, or, you know, a lot of times, especially with, you know, younger acts now, when they cover a song, like, I'll do one that I've posted a handful of covers of, Hanging on the Telephone by The Nerve, written by, I believe Jack Lee wrote it. And, you know, everybody knows the Blondie version.
Right.
And everybody thinks the Blondie version is, you know, the only version because it was the most popular. But to me, because I'm a Nerves fan and because I remember the original version, you know, I'm never going to see any version as anything other than a cover of what was the original song. So I think the popularity of the artists involved sometimes gets in the way and kind of, you know, I know that when... Well, there are cover albums too, where somebody covers a Beatles song, and then, or even Nirvana with, you know, they did Man Who Sold the World. I know millions of people who think that Nirvana wrote Man Who Sold the World.
Sure.
And, you know, but then now when you hear covers of it, you can hear a cover and know that that person is covering the Nirvana version. Because
right.
It sounds exactly like the Nirvana version. So in that instance, I do want to say, you know, yeah, they are covering the Nirvana version.
Well,
so
this came up when I was talking about Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah recently on my blog, and I totally got into this because it turns out, and Jamie got into it too, there's this whole history of how ownership of that song as if it were an original has shifted over time. And it was really interesting. It was his song, and then it was who else? It was Jeff Buckley's song.
Jeff Buckley, yeah.
But between then, there was this John Cale version that
I
hadn't
necessarily
heard.
Oh, that's my favorite version.
Yeah, and this question of people kept writing into me or sending me email and saying, you have to check out this resource, and there's this discussion of it over here. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting because what I had set out to write when I put up the post about that originally was, I don't think Hallelujah is really considered a Leonard Cohen song anymore, so it would be a real shame if they played that at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame when they inducted him into the Hall of Fame. And sure enough, there's Damien Rice doing Hallelujah, and it's Jeff Buckley's version.
That's a very good point. I mean, that's an excellent, because you look at things like a really good example also is All Along the Watchtower. There's when people do a cover of that song, they're not doing a cover of the Bob Dylan version as much as they're doing a cover of the Jimi Hendrix version. Even Bob Dylan these days, when he does All Along the Watchtower in concert, is doing a version more derivative of Jimmy's version than his own.
But ultimately, I think it all speaks to the power of the original song. I mean, I'm never going to hear Hallelujah and not think of it as a Leonard Cohen song. That's partially because I'm a Leonard Cohen fan you know, really related to that album. And I will admit that I became a Leonard Cohen fan because of the John Cale version of Hallelujah. And so on the one hand, you know, to me, the John Cale version was maybe I don't think it was the first version I heard, but it was the first version that, you know, made me take notes and research and find out about Leonard Cohen. And then I became obsessed with Leonard Cohen for a period of time. And so even when I do get frustrated when people, hell, on American Idol this season, they had a 80s night or something, and somebody sang Hallelujah. I'm like, how does that even fit in the 80s? The Jeff Buckley version was in the 90s. I was trying to wrap my head around how that fit in the 80s, and it just made me think, okay, you know, that's one of those songs that, you know, whoever you heard it first or whatever version you like best, that's, you know, you're going to consider it that song. But I still think that ultimately it speaks to the power of the original, and that's why on my blog, and I make mistakes from time to time, but, you know, I try to research, and I will almost always write down the, you know, when I'm talking about it as a cover song, I will refer to it as whoever performed it originally. Mm-hmm. And if I feel like there's going to be any confusion, I'll throw in, you know, composed by this person,
right,
or
lyrics by
most,
this person.
Most popularly performed by this person.
Yeah.
Because to me, you know, if a song is good enough to be covered a million times by, you know, really, you know, well-respected artists and that are actually selling copies of it, then that just speaks to the quality of the original song.
No, I agree. Now, actually, it's funny, on that same kind of note then, and Liza, we'll start with you on this one. What songs, you know, we bring up Hallelujah, and I bet this is going to be on a bunch of people's lists, but what songs should never be covered again, or what songs have been covered completely?
I honestly, every time I think that there are certain songs that should never be covered again, every now and again, you know, you'll hear a version and you'll be like, oh man, they did it right, you know?
Right.
So I can't, as much as I'm like kind of the lover of all things bad and good about covers, I don't know that I can say that there are any songs that shouldn't be covered again. Mm-hmm. I would like to see more bad songs covered well, mm-hmm. as opposed to good songs covered poorly. But, you know, again, that's all in the eye of the beholder too. I personally could live without What a Wonderful World. I could also live without Wild Thing and Louie Louie and things, you know, of that nature. And now I have to admit that the ironic hipster backlash is hitting me, and where I used to really be into the whole, like, oh, here's an indie artist performing a pop, you know, that to me that's the new thing.
Yeah.
Like all these, you know, indie bands are recording pop songs. I think it kind of started when Travis covered Baby One More Time, and it's just kind of gone from there to this thing where any song that's popular on the top 40 or R&B chart is like immediately covered by an indie or a folk rock band.
Absolutely,
and
like Umbrella
kidding.
And My Humps.
I was just going to say Umbrella.
And they're good covers, though. Don't get me wrong. I love that Umbrella cover. You know, I love the Irreplaceable cover that I posted. I mean, I love them. I love the Glenn Hanser doing Justin Timberlake. I love it, but I'm getting tired of everybody doing it.
Yeah. Steve, what's your take on this?
Well, it's easy to say that, you know, the song that I don't think should be covered anymore is the song that I've always hated. it's really easy for me to say no one should ever cover my favorite things because I've always hated that song.
Oh, how could you hate that song?
Because it's like they wrote the lyrics by pointing their fingers in a rhyming dictionary. I'm sorry, but brown paper packages tied up with string are nobody's favorite thing.
No, the things inside the packages.
Yeah, exactly.
We know.
And then there's the other line that, you know, if you get bitten
by a dog. If you were growing up in Austria in the 40s, you don't know that. There might have been very exciting things in that brown paper.
I guess, but, you know, and then there's the line that, you know, if you get bitten by a dog, just think of your favorite things and everything will be good. No, find out if the dog's had a rabies shot, you know?
So Steve, even if one of your favorite bands were to do a cover of My Favorite Things,
you don't think it would change your mind? I could get behind it. That's why I say that's an easy thing to say. I would be more inclined to say that, you know, anything that your typical wedding DJ plays is a good candidate not to get covered again.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Beatles fan, and there are just so many Beatles covers out there. Some of them good, some of them bad. But I'm kind of with Liza insofar as, you know, I'm willing to let anybody take a shot at any song because, you know, they might do something interesting with it.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. I'm as much as I hate My Favorite Things, I'd still say if you can do it well, go for it.
Curtis, how about you?
Well, from a Disney standpoint, I'd have to say that we really don't need any more covers of When You Wish Upon a Star.
Oh, good point.
I've got about, I think, 60 or 70 versions of that song, and 85% of them are not original and fairly boring. So that's definitely at the top of my list. I also am a big fan of Rainbow Connection, the Kermit the Frog song from the Muppets, and there are a bunch of covers of that one. So I don't really think that one needs to be covered anymore either.
Yeah. Jamie?
I'm with Liza and Steve. Like, I don't really think you can, like, there are a lot of songs that seem to be covered to death, but, you know, like, something could come along and totally change your perspective of that song. I thought I'd heard enough of Nothing Compares to You,
right.
And, you know, like, you could be like, oh, Sinead O'Connor, like, that's the definitive version or something. But then, like, I like the Meifert and the Gimme version of that. I heard a Stereophonic one that was all right. And I was like, okay, well, that's enough covers of that. I like those, but that's enough. And then just like a month or two ago, I heard this guy, Dan Kelly. Have you heard of this one? It's like from an Australian cover compilation, No Man's Land or No Man's Woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the Dan Kelly version, like, it's this ukulele. It's really nice. And I was like, wow. Like, I totally didn't think I could hear another cover of that again. And this is just a sample. Like, there's a whole lot of Nothing Compared to You, but hearing that Dan Kelly one, I don't know, it like revitalized my interest in the song, and I was like, oh, okay, sure.
It's been 7 hours and 15 days since you took your love away. I go out every night and sleep all day since you took your love away. Since you've been gone, I can do whatever I want. I can see whoever I choose. I can eat my dinner in a fancy restaurant, but nothing, nothing can take away these blues. Because nothing compares, nothing compares to you.
And yeah, to cut them off, like, to say a song is covered to death, you're like limiting the possibilities. There's so many possibilities that you can approach a cover, and it's just that most people choose to ignore them. Like, I'm sure there's, like, I don't know, like an accordion Hallelujah that we can hear, and or, like, I don't know, some sort of klezmer.
A string tribute to My Favorite Things for
yeah,
Steve.
Exactly. It's just that everyone...
I'd listen to a klezmer version of My Favorite Things in a second.
Klezmer yeah,
My Favorite
yeah.
Things? I'm
too.
Totally there.
That'd be fun. I'll give you that one.
Joshua, how about you? Anything you don't want to hear covered anymore?
Well, two things I actually want to say. One is a long time ago, I thought that was possible. Jamie and I have talked about this a bunch already. We started a small exchange when we saw the Onion AV Club article about 10 songs or 12 songs that should never be covered ever again. And I think we both reacted strongly to that. A long time ago, I thought that it was possible for songs to be covered to death. And then I heard Negative Land's version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, which actually is it's a 3-year-old with hiccups singing the song. And I...
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high.
That's the entire recording. One of the guys from one of the driving forces behind Negative Land is actually a preschool teacher in his day job. So he just stuck the microphone in front of some kids with hiccups. And I remember hearing that and thinking, oh, I guess there is that revitalizing element where the ukulele, the accordion, the klezmer band, someone can come along and say, you thought this song was exhausted. That said, I do think there are a lot of songs that are so saturated that they should be on sabbatical for a while. That maybe if there was a way to push a button and say there's a 10-year moratorium on covers of Umbrella, and then let's see if it's still around, that would be worth doing.
Yeah, do you think we'd see any covers of Umbrella 10 years from now?
Well, you know, I say this as someone, and I thought it was interesting that song came up. I say this as someone who literally just posted it yesterday. But it was because the John West version, it's acoustic, I think it's a decent folk version, and it's the sexiest acoustic song I've heard in a long time. And that's hard when you take a song that other people are playing on accordion. So I thought it was actually a fairly good example of you take something, you manage to capture the spirit. But then again, I posted it with a caveat. And I think a lot of us do that. We put up, I've seen all of us put up songs and say, you know, I'm putting this up. It's really strange. It's Steve just did a Tuvan throat singing thing. Oh, and yeah. There's that, you know, I think I thought this song was done, but then there was this Tuvan throat singing version. And it turns out that's worth hearing once.
Right.
Tuvan throat singing is always worth hearing.
Once.
Well, and you should go and hear someone do Tuvan throat singing live. It's absolutely mesmerizing.
Really?
I would like to.
Oh, yeah.
We talked a second ago about that Australian CD, The No Man's Woman. I mean, as cover bloggers, you guys see so many more CDs coming from the UK and Australia, I think anyway, pertaining to covers than you do in America. Or maybe I'm wrong about this, but it does tend to seem like the Australians especially, and also the folks in the UK, love covers a little bit more than Americans do and Canadians do.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say and this is going to probably alienate a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead.
And it's just my opinion based on just, you know, being around for a long time. I think that people in the UK and Australia like music more than people in the States do. I mean, I find that over the years, when I started listening to music and getting into music, and even if it was something like, okay, I was obsessed with Duran Duran when I was 10 or 12 or however old I was. Mm-hmm. And because of my love for Duran Duran, I started getting magazines like Smash Hits from the UK, and, you know, because they were everywhere in those magazines.
Right.
So then I would read these magazines, and it would just be full of bands I'd never heard of that were super popular there. And I just feel like everything gets a shot there. I like, all kinds of music are getting a shot there. People are so famous there, and they get famous. Even American acts get famous there first. I worked music retail. People would come in and be like, you know, do you have the new Backstreet Boys CD? And I'd never heard of the Backstreet Boys. Nobody had ever heard of the Backstreet Boys, but they were big in Germany. You know, and people would get angry at you and say, but they're from the States. And I'm like, you know, and then, of course, you know, 5 months later, you know, everybody knew who the Backstreet Boys were. So I just feel like there's a finger on the pulse of everything that's going on in all genres of music. That is, people are really looking for it there. I think about a show like Later with Jules Holland and think that could never exist here.
Right.
People will be like, I'm not watching a handful of bands I've never heard of just to see the one that I like.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know,
I discovered so many cool bands on that show.
But isn't that why it can exist there? Isn't that why it can exist there? I mean, you're talking about countries that don't have the kind of competition and commercial-based competition for airwaves that we do. So we end up, the irony is that we have more channels and a much more even keel of what we think we're seeing across those channels.
Right.
But I think that underneath all that, there's a lot of local stuff that happens all over the country in this country that, because the country is so big and there's so many different kinds of local in the United States, I think it just doesn't get spread around in the same way that things that might happen in smaller countries might. I mean, we're huge, and the example I'm thinking of is I got this great funk New Orleans kid song CD, and I sent something to Curtis off that too, and I put up on his blog. And that was a really nice regional authentic thing that I hadn't heard of in any way. I got connected to by some promoter and they sent it to me, but it's not in stores in this part of the country. It's from 800 miles away. And from here in New England, New Orleans might as well be another country. It's just that it doesn't have the same kind of promotional vehicle behind it as, say, England does looking towards us.
Right, and you really have to, I find, like, you know, I stumble on things like that, but you really have to be looking for certain things in order to find a lot of that stuff, and because there is so much. And I just think that, I don't know, I think that whatever's going on in other countries in terms of, maybe it's not as commercial, it's definitely, I just feel like I meet people from other countries and they're more well-rounded and more knowledgeable about, you know, and we're talking about bands that are somewhat popular anyhow. We're not talking about, you know, just, you know, bands that are like small local bands, but bands that have some sort of distribution or, so, you know, something going on. And I just feel like the internet yeah, you can find out a lot on the internet, but you still kind of have to be looking for it because there is just so much.
Right.
So I don't know.
Every month I pick up, you know, copies of Q and Mojo and the British music magazines because I learn more about not just the UK bands, but the American bands as well. I mean, I found out about the Polyphonic Spree from Q for crying out loud, and they're a Dallas band. So, I mean, as you're going through those magazines, you got to look at them and say, all right, am I learning about a band from the UK, or are you learning about a band from America?
And as much as I hate to say it, if somebody says, I have three cover albums, two of them are from the United States. I'm not going to tell you anything about them. Mm-hmm. Two of them were produced here in the United States, and one's from Australia. I'm mm-hmm. going for the one from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just think that I'm going to hear more unique takes on the songs
sure.
than I would. I mean, and I hate to say that because it's not necessarily fair. There are tons of American acts that are on some of those. Even the worst compilation might have that one song that you're like, oh my God, that person really did it right. So,
right.
you know, I don't mean to bash American artists or American record companies or distribution, but I just feel like because, you know, the market is so oversaturated and only certain things are deemed marketable, you know, it becomes really hard to find that quality.
Sure.
Here.
Steve, Curtis, Jamie, any thoughts?
I want to hear the Canadians.
Well, actually, some of the most interesting Disney cover albums that I have are from Japan. A good chunk of the Disney cover songs are Japanese. If Liza, you said if you were to choose between American or Australian cover albums, which would you choose? I would definitely go for Japanese ones because those covers
I would choose Japanese before Australian, definitely.
Yeah. They're by far the most original and really fun to listen to.
Absolutely.
Yep.
When I was thinking about the difference between these international cover albums and the U.S. ones, like the U.K., like they have a lot of avenues where you hear cover music, like the BBC, like they have that mm-hmm. Joe Wiley show and Dermot O'Leary, and then you have the Uncut Q Mojo or whatever. They always have those like CDs that have all like that they gathered all these artists to record songs for. Mm-hmm. And then Australia, they have like Triple J, there's Andrew Denton or something like that. Okay. But when I think of US, like most of the cover songs, like a lot of covers, soundtracks, that's what I'm thinking of, the soundtracks is like,
right.
it's like a haven for cover songs. So a lot of covers end up, like, when they record, they're like, oh, we need some filler songs, and they throw it on a soundtrack. And a lot of those ones are just, like, not the, like, yeah, they're the more commercial cover songs. Or, like, for the Disney soundtracks, you got all these Disney Channel artists, and
right.
it's just a straightforward pop cover of...
Yeah, a lot of the times on those soundtracks, I feel like the cover songs are just a... The artist didn't really feel like writing their own song or had time to do it, so they kind of, oh, let's just throw this together and stick that on this soundtrack.
Absolutely. Or in some cases, it's a financial decision. We can't afford the real mm-hmm. version of, Tainted Love, so hey, let's get somebody else to do it.
Or, you know, it's a theme, you know, like, was it the 51st Date soundtrack? That's all cover songs, you know, like from the 80s or whatever, or, you know. And,
Life,
and
Life
I can
Aquatic.
Understand it. Mm-hmm. If there's like a theme, well, the Life Aquatic, I don't know. That's kind of in a different, it's, you know, one person in one sort of genre doing it. I think that that's a little bit different than just like, hey, let's get Fall Out Boy to sing this song and let's get, you know, whoever else to do this other one. And God knows we need another version of Tainted Love. And it's the same type of music getting covered. So you're not going to hear... It's going to be whatever the one-hit wonder was getting covered, as opposed to, you know, I've got nothing against Fall Out Boy doing covers. I just wish that it wasn't a song that we've heard a million times. And it's, you know, I feel like with foreign tribute albums or cover albums, you're gonna get a handful of songs that you know performed by people you don't, so you might learn something that way.
Right.
And then sometimes you are gonna get songs covered that you're like, I think about something simple like, you know, somebody covering oh, what's that song? Sweet Dreams of My LAX by Rachel Stevens. Like, I think about, you know, somebody covers that and you're like, I don't even know that song. Who are they covering? But you know that to them it's a popular song to be covered, you know, popular enough to have been covered in this. And I just think it kind of wakes you up a little bit more to music in general. What else is out there in a way that the majority of the cover albums I see in America don't? It's like, oh, yeah, we know Tainted Love, and oh, yeah, we know Karma Chameleon, and yeah, we, you know, I don't feel like there's as much opportunity to learn or discover new music.
See, that's interesting. I think it's important. Now, it's worth pointing out, right? I'm a folk blogger, so I think of American popular culture as what we're talking about now. Mm-hmm. But I think of the American regional cultures, which are sort of many different kinds of little tiny countries of music and musical styles in the country, as something else entirely. And I think it's an important distinction. You know, when I think of
Definitely.
The kinds of soundtracks that we're talking about, soundtracks are designed to recreate something familiar because American popular culture starts with the assumption that you already know this, and it's designed to recycle familiarity in a way that I think is not as authentic as the best kind of cover songs that we probably all think of in our own mind. I mean, that's a different kind of familiarity. It's mass familiarity rather than unique and owned familiarity. But when I think of the better cover albums or tribute albums that I know of that have come out of this country, almost all of them are either genre specific. There's some beautiful, very label specific, even cover albums or tribute albums of people like Greg Brown or Bob Dylan, or local specific. You get these great Boston punk band compilations all covering the same band from the 1980s. And those tend to turn out really nice. I don't think of those as on the same par as the kind of popular, you know, too much Nickelback, too many Spider-Man soundtracks that I think we're all envisioning here.
Absolutely.
And they're Canadian.
Yeah, well, that's, thank you. North American, I should specify.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about these regional ones. There was that Bridging the Distance album from last year, which
that's so good.
I called that my favorite cover album of 2007. And actually, that's a good segue into the next question. We'll start with Steve on this one. What was your favorite cover album from 2007?
Oh, goodness.
I probably should have prepped you for this one.
Yeah. Golly.
You know what? Actually, I'll do this. If anyone, go ahead and just jump on in. We don't have to rotate on this one.
I'm going to say the Sexton Blake one. I mean, I don't remember the name. Plays the Hits. Sexton Blake Plays the Hits. Mm-hmm. It's probably the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head as having been from 2007, because I'm very rarely looking for, you know, I don't remember what years things came out. I'm not,
sure.
I'm not like that, but you know, I feel like I played it for some people that are like, oh my God, that's terrible. And some people are like, oh no, it's kind of good. I just kind of like the spirit behind it. It's just, you know, it's kind of what I said that I'm getting kind of sick of, which is, you know, kind of indie takes on pop songs, but I still like that one.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like the Mark Ronson version.
Yes,
album. That was my top one of 2007. I heard some kind of middling or even bad reviews of it, but I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. No, that was good. Definitely very good.
I started my blog, actually, because I just wrote about this for my six-month anniversary for the blog. I started the blog with a cover album that was Richard Schindel, and he used to be part of the New York City sort of urban folk scene of the 70s and 80s. And he actually he gave up on American culture. He now lives in Brazil, I think. But he's still making really nice folk music, and it's a beautiful tribute album. It's not the sort of indie stuff that we're talking about here. And I have to give him props, because that was really the album where I listened to it and I thought, maybe it's time to finally jump in and start the blog. And that was good. It's called South of Delia, and it has, you know, a Josh Ritter, it has Mercy Street, it has Born in the USA, some good stuff.
Very good. Do you think at the end of 2008 we're going to have anything with Scarlett Johansson's upcoming Tom Waits album on our top 10 list.
I'm so scared of that record. But the concept terrifies me.
No, I think we'll still be thinking, all apologies to Liza, I'll still be thinking about She and Him probably at that point, and the Frame Sound, the Glenn Hansen stuff.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I have to reserve judgment. I've never been the hugest Tom Waits fan, and I have never been a huge Scarlett Johansson fan. So the combination to me is very frightening.
Right. Well, for you, it could be two wrongs making a right.
Well, exactly, and that's why I never rule it out. I'm like, well, but then, you know, like, what's the? No, I can't even remember what I was going to reference. So never mind.
Right. And I think part of it is also going to be the song choice. I think I would actually pay money to hear Scarlett Johansson do Postcard from a Hooker in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be interesting.
You know, if we could set the set list, then I think you've got something there. a lot of us, and this question comes from Joshua, a lot of us focus on cross-genre covers, for example, the rap song being sung by Nina Gordon or the string quartet tribute to Nine Inch Nails or whatever. Do you think this is, and you mentioned this a little bit earlier, Liza, do you think it's the easy way out for covers? Is there something more noble and more difficult in trying to truly make a song your own?
I think it's far more difficult for a folk singer to take one of their favorite folk songs and do a really good version of it that adds, you know what I mean? Or same thing with any genre, country, indie. I just feel like I do think it is an easy way out in a lot of ways. And I also find it maybe it's, you know, a little tired and cliche now, but I feel like, okay, if you've come to the decision that, okay, I can't cover something in my own genre and do it the justice I feel it deserves, mm-hmm. But I do like this other song, and I feel like, you know, I can at least have a different point of view on this song, then, I don't know, I still appreciate those types of things, and I appreciate them more when it's a song that I really feel comes out of left field, as opposed to like, oh, I'm this underground artist who would never sing a Justin Timberlake song, but I'm going to do it because, you know, like, not like that,
right.
But like when you really find, I'm also a fan of when people aren't like, we'll take a deeper cut.
Mm-hmm.
Deeper, you know, okay, like do a Britney Spears song, but do something that maybe what didn't hit the top five,
sure.
You know, or do a, you know, a popular act from the 80s, but not do the song that, you know, we've heard a million times. So I'm a little more excited when I hear something like that, you know, and I spend a lot of time thinking about albums that I have from my childhood or from, you know, my adolescence. And I do spend a lot of time hunting for covers of specific songs that are deeper cuts on those albums, hoping that I'm going to find somebody doing a cover of that song instead of doing, you know, a cover of, you know, Hungry Like the Wolf, you know, or whatever. I don't know why I keep going back to Duran Duran, but like, yeah, I can live without another cover of Hungry Like the Wolf, but like, you know, if somebody were to do The Seventh Stranger, like, I'm there, you know?
There you go, right. Right, or The Chauffeur. A Chauffeur's been covered a few times, but that mm-hmm. always does seem to be a really good way to express a band's style, more so than Hungry Like the Wolf or Rio or something along those lines.
Something that didn't have a video. I like to, you know what I mean? If somebody covers a song by a band that was relatively popular for one of their songs that didn't have a video, when we're talking about bands that had videos, or, you know, if we're not talking about the types of bands that have videos, you know, then just not the one hit on the song or the one song that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That really limits your audience, though, because you're then saying, I'm going to make a cover of a song that only caters to people who are hardcore into music and know all of this stuff.
No, but it shouldn't be... But I'm saying it shouldn't be about that. I think that if an artist is covering a song, it should be because it means something to them and not because it was just a song that everybody knows and is identifying. And we're also, I mean, we're coming from this from a point of view of people who are looking for cover songs and talking about cover songs and analyzing cover songs. Most cover songs on albums are throwaway songs. I mean, in the terms of, you know, they're not going to be the hits mm-hmm. on the song.
No, I don't think that's necessarily true. I mean, I actually have just started sending out questions to some of the artists whose songs I'm posting and asking them about it. And in the folk world, at least, the responses I get back are things, well, this is from Angel. This is a quote from Angel Snow, who's the singer-songwriter I wrote about this week. She says, "In order for me to cover a song, the melody must strike me as well thought out. I can't just relate to the song personally. It must also involve the artist's emotional detail. I tend to crave a genuine credibility from an artist's voice and lyrics, songs in which I believe every word. If I'm able to put myself in the situation of a song and play the part, then I know it's for real, and I want to share it with others." Now, she wrote that to me, and I thought, that's beautiful. So then I asked her, what else do you want to perform in your next album? What would you be interested in covering? And she said, I'd love to do Radiohead's Creep. And the idea that she thinks... Isn't that great? The idea that she thinks she can own it in that way, that she hears that song, that she hears she said something about Robert Smith and Just Like Heaven, the idea that she thinks she could actually own those songs in a way that she could put them on like a mask and take them seriously.
I need to clarify my term throwaway. I don't mean throwaway in terms of like, oh, I'm just doing this song to put something else on the album. I mean, I was thinking in more in terms of, you know, I was talking about bigger artists who, you know, the way that it would appear on an album. I can't really articulate what I meant by that, but it wasn't. I think that when you see a cover on an album and it's not one of the singles and it, you know, it doesn't become a single or it doesn't become, you know, this breakout hit, it most certainly is that type of song. It is a song that artist really likes, really identifies with. I just find that the cover songs that become popular that people are always bringing up to me are never those songs. Mm. They're never those really heartfelt covers that, you know, are on this album. And you're like, you know, oh my God, they covered this. They did it really well. It's always those kind of cheesy, we did this crazy cover song, you know. Those are the songs that people are always approaching me about. So that's what I was talking about.
Well, that makes sense. But, sure.
I don't think that... covering a song in a different musical style is necessarily the easy way out, unless you're doing it as shtick, you know, like Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, you know, then it's just kind of shtick and it's, you know, they're doing it because they can make money doing that. I think that you really need to, if you're going to cover a song, it should be a song that means something to you, that you appreciate either because it's one of the songs that made you want to be a musician or because you were really moved when you heard the original. And the fact that you work in a different musical style, I don't think necessarily means it's taking the easy way out if you cover it in the style that you perform in.
Mm-hmm. So. With kind of on that same note, with bands that maybe don't record their covers in studio versions on the albums, but perform them live, do you feel like they're able to inject as much of their own personal style into it in a live version as they would be in a studio version? Or do you think a live version is, I'm sorry, a cover in a concert is, again, a way to make a connection with the fans, especially if, you know, you're the opening act and you don't have that connection to the audience already?
Well, I think to a certain extent, you know, not being a musician, but it just seems to me that a lot of bands that cover songs live or play cover songs at their concerts are doing it because they're fun songs to play. I don't think they're necessarily doing it to win over the audience or something like that. But mm-hmm. you know, they're favorite songs, and you know, they've always liked Red Rubber Ball, and it's a fun song to play. So I think that's. And that's perfectly fine. It's well and good. Although I find that, you know, a lot of live covers aren't all that interesting because they tend to hew pretty closely to the original version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know on Coverville, I tend to stay away from playing a lot of live songs just because it's, I don't feel like it's as definitive or as unique to that band's style. In some cases, I mean, there's a band that sounds you recognize from a live show versus just as much as you'd recognize from a studio version. But I know, at least with me, that I tend to stay away from the live covers. I think, Joshua, you had mentioned that you tend to avoid live covers, but I think you said it was mostly because of the occasional poor audio quality.
Well, it's partially because of the poor audio quality. I mean, I just think if we're going to share music, and regardless of what kind of blogger we are, all of us are sharing music for all sorts of good reasons. I think the idea that you would make a big deal and put your own time into putting up a post and saying, here's some music, and then it sounds like there's someone screaming in your ear while you're listening to it is a little awkward. But I also agree very much with, was that Steve who was just talking? That, yeah. I think there's something about live covers that are in some ways, I think they're played for the crowd. The idea that you'd go into a studio, this isn't always true, but I agree that the effort it takes to go into a studio and say, studio time isn't free, we're going to put real effort into producing this properly, and then you're going to choose someone else's song, that already implies a level of commitment to making the song successful and the performance successful that I think sets the stage for a better potential for a good cover and a good song.
In the past year, and I've got a Google alert thing that tells me whenever a newspaper or any blogger talks about cover songs, of course, I subscribe to all of yours, but if there's somebody else out there, a non-cover blogger that talks about cover songs, a lot of lists have come up in the last year saying, all right, what are the best cover songs? And it's usually stuff like, God, what have I seen on there? Orgy's cover of New Order's Blue Monday. And boy, I'm thinking of, I'm drawing
Johnny
a blank here on some
Hurt
of them. There you go. Yes, Johnny Cash's version of Hurt. Are there some on there that you think are victims of their own familiarity? In other words, because people have been seeing these things on the lists, they really wouldn't belong there on one of your lists, but because people see them on list A, they automatically become people's favorite cover songs and they put them on list B.
Well, I think that's entirely possible. I think that sometimes folks will see something on a list and then you'll say, oh yeah, that is good. You know, they hadn't thought about it. And then, you know, since someone else has suggested it, it seems that much better. You know, I don't think it's necessarily a conscious decision. I think it's probably more just human nature.
Mm-hmm. It depends who's writing it, what source. I have a degree in journalism, which I've done nothing with, but you know, whatever. But I've actually studied journalism and been around people who've gone on to be journalists, and there are just different there are certain publications whose opinions I'm going to respect more because I know that they're hiring journalists based on, you know, their level of knowledge on a certain topic. But then there are other ones that are like, I don't know, I don't want to really name any names, but there are some that are just more kind of like, let's say, mainstream. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there's like, oh, here's a fun thing about cover songs. And then, you know, who's ever writing it, they might know a little bit about music and they're going to lots of industry stuff, but they're going to the industry showcases that are of bands that are really popular and that kind of stuff. And I think 9 out of 10 times they're just kind of Googling best cover songs and, you know, finding those other lists and using the same list to say, oh, yeah, that is a good cover song. You know, I hate to say that, but when I read most lists that people send me like that and it has those same songs on it,
right,
I feel like, yeah, I read that article a year ago, too. You know, I just feel like I'm reading the same article over and over again. And for the most part, I think I just like if I see Orgy's Blue Monday on it, I'm done.
Right.
I don't necessarily hate that, but I mean, I hate the Frente version of Bizarre Love Triangle, but I would rather listen to that 100 times than listen to that Orgy cover. So to me, I just feel like there are certain songs where their presence on one of those lists you know, will just negate the rest of the list for me. So well, that's how I feel about that.
No, and that makes sense. It does seem, and there are some examples where it does seem like it's really just the newspaper kind of pandering to the people who respond in blogs and say, well, what's your favorite cover? And it does seem to be like one of those really long generating responses that seems to get the everybody who reads that blog to respond to it. So,
right, and because we are people who are focused in on covers, we've already searched out all those lists and we've seen them 100 times. So when we read that article, we know, okay, they are recycling the same old stuff. But, you know, the average reader that's reading that publication might be turned on to something new. So,
right.
You know, is it awful? No, but it's just the current state of, you know, the media, I suppose. It's just, you know, there are very few news stories. I mean, unless you're reading a publication that you can tell really cares about it. I mean, like, I'm, you know, super impressed with Joshua's level of dedication to, you know, really seeking out this folk music. And, you know, when I read what he writes and even just hearing him talk now, like, you really know a lot about folk music. And you really, you know, so I'm going to take, you know, whatever you say far more seriously if I'm going to start, you know, getting really into folk music or folk covers than I would, you know, even if a publication I respected wrote a quick little best folk covers thing, you know, if I don't know anything, the background about the person writing it, and it's just like a sidebar bullet point list, mm-hmm. you know, I don't have any interest in that.
Right.
Well, thank you, Liza.
Oh, you're welcome.
Now, I kind of hinted that this question was coming, and I'm going to preface a little bit by rewording it slightly. I was going to ask you what your favorite cover song was. I'm going to preface that or rewrite it a little bit and say, what's your favorite cover song today? Like, if I were to ask you what your favorite cover song today, it might be different from something you knew or something you had a year ago or 2 years ago or whenever. But and since I didn't give you a whole lot of warning on this one, I'll let whoever wants to jump in first. But what is your favorite cover song?
Oh, I think my favorite cover song today and maybe forever would be the Blues Magoo's version of Heartbreak Hotel.
Wow.
it's a fantastic song. There is no whiff of Elvis in it at all. It's got a wonderful vibraphone solo, and the singer just—he really sounds like he's been driven completely insane by heartbreak and grief. It's a wonderful, wonderful song.
Some room. gets the win. Ah, the desk clerk's dressed in black. They've been so long on a lonely street, they'll never, never, never go back. Oh, now I get so lonely.
Excellent. Somebody else?
I think, okay, the one I'm going with that I, whenever I've been asked this before, I always kind of say, the one I'm talking about is Danny Michel's Young Americans. Mm. And I know this has been featured on Cover Freak, and Joshua had it there on Cover Late On. I've had it on there. I've never seen
it. I'm sorry, whose version of it?
Danny Michel. He's a Canadian.
He's Canadian.
yeah, but I always tell people it's in my top five somewhere. It's in my top five. But I say that so much that I might as well just, like, if I had to pick one, I would label it as, well, maybe one or two. Because it's so hard. There's so many good cover songs that it's hard to pick one definitive one. But let's just say for now, Danny Michel's Young Americans. It's from a Bowie cover album he did a few years ago called Loving the Alien.
Her down, he frowns. Gee, my life's a funny thing, I'm still too young. He kissed her then and there. She took his ring, took his babies. It took him minutes, it took her nowhere. Heaven knows she'd have taken anything. And all night she was a young American. Young American, young American, she was a young American. All night, she was a young American. Scanning life through the picture window, she finds a slinky vagabond. He coughs as he passes her Ford Mustang. Heaven forbid she'd take anything. But the freak and his type are for nothing. Misses a step and cuts his hand. Showing nothing, he swoops like a song. She cries, where have all Papa's heroes gone? All night, she was a young American. All the way from Washington. Her breadwinner begs on the bathroom floor. We live for just these 20 years. Do we have to die for the 50 more? All night, she was a young American. Young American, young American. She was a young American. All right, she was a young American. President Nixon, do you remember all the bills you had to pay?
for even yesterday. Have you been un-American? Just you and your idol sing falsetto. Leather, leather everywhere. Not a mitt left from the ghetto. You carry a razor just in case of a case of depression. Sit on your hands on the buses of life, laughing at all them apple sheeners. Ain't that close enough? Oh, ain't that close to love? That ain't no Barbie doll. Her heart's been broken just like you all. All night she was a young American. Young American, young American. She was a young American. All night she was a young American. You ain't a pimp, you ain't a hustler. The pimp's got a caddy and the lady's got a Chrysler. And black's got respect, white's got a soul train. Mama's got cramps, baby, look at your handshake. I read the news today, oh boy. You got a sweet and you got the feeling. Ain't there a man who can say no more? Ain't there no woman I can sock on the jaw? Ain't there a child I can hold without judging? Ain't there a pen that will write before they die? Ain't you proud that you still got faces? There ain't no one damn song that can make me break down and cry. Was a young American. All night she was a young American.
And he really, it's an acoustic one, and he really digs down and finds this bittersweet melody that I didn't really like. If I go back and listen to the original, I'll hear it, but it's kind of overwhelmed by like funky saxophone and keyboards and stuff. But hearing the Danny Michelle version is really, found a new part of the aspect of the song that I never really noticed before.
Mm-hmm. And he and M. Griner actually did, they had a radio show for a while, or maybe it was a one-time thing?
I think it was a one-off thing. It was supposed to be an ongoing thing, but from what I tell, they only did it once.
Huh. Interesting. Curtis, what's your favorite Disney cover? I assume your favorite cover would be a Disney cover.
Well, I do have favorites in Disney and in non-Disney as well. Mm-hmm. As far as Disney goes, there is a... actually, the first cover that I posted on my site was a version of Part of Your World from The Little Mermaid by a Japanese group called Sumitsu and the Sumith. And that one is really good. I love it.
Yeah.
Also, Grim Grinning Ghost, the song from the Haunted Mansion ride. Bare Naked Ladies does a great version of that. Mm. And there's actually a really good version of What's This from The Nightmare Before Christmas by Fall Out Boy. Yeah, that's unusual, yeah. But it's great.
See? I told you.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. Non-Disney songs. There's, I never know how to pronounce this guy's name. There's a version of Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the Hawaiian version, I think, off of 50
Oh, Israel. Kamakawiwa.
Yeah, I love that version. I think that's great.
I got taken to task by a listener because of my mispronunciation of Israel Kamakawiwa Ole. And so it was right after that. They broke it down phonetically. And from that point on, I've always been able to, you know, I've never let myself not say Israel Kamakawiwa Ole.
Every letter is pronounced.
My favorite thing that somebody ever said to me is when a woman came into Borders when I worked there and was like, yeah, I'm looking for it's a cover of Somewhere Over the Rainbow by the Fat Hawaiian Guy. And I was like, oh, of course. I mean, I knew who, you know, I was just like, well, you know, I guess she, I knew who she was talking about. So,
yeah.
Sorry, that's me.
Somebody really wants to get a hold of you, Joshua.
I know. Hold on a sec. I'll turn it off, and then I'll come back and answer the question.
Sounds good. In the meantime, I'll ask you, Liz, careful there. I'd seen on a blog post that whenever you see one of those top 10 lists, you look and see if a certain song is in there, and if it's not, you disregard the whole list.
I can't even remember what that song was.
Well, and I can't either, so maybe I'll just edit this little chunk out.
I don't know. And that's the thing for me, it changes so quickly. I mean, there are certainly songs that when I feel like, okay, somebody's like, well, send me a crazy cover. Send me a cover that you think is really interesting. Mm-hmm. There are a handful of songs that I do tend to really gravitate toward. And I think one is the Balinescu Quartet's version of Kraftwerk's Pocket Calculator, which is just, I think that's on a whole album of them doing Kraftwerk covers. So, and it's a string quartet, and back before string quartets were doing everything, but it's just a really, I think, to me, I think when I first heard it, I thought, oh my God, like, I really felt like not only did they completely rework this and reinvent it, but it's not necessarily in a genre of music that I am drawn to, mm-hmm. But it was so, it sounded so interesting to me that, had I not known it was a Kraftwerk cover, I still would have been interested in who was performing it. I would have heard it and thought, like, even if it was an original of theirs, I would have heard it and thought, oh my God, this music is really, really interesting. And another one is the Low IQ 1 featuring Yukari Fresh version of Anarchy in the UK by the Sex Pistols. Mm-hmm.
I'm
that's another one that I go to because it's just that kind of like really, and again, it's the whole genre crossing thing, but I don't know, for some reason I feel like the Japanese do it so much better. But it's, you know, they just do this really kind of whimsical, poppy, almost like 60s orchestral poppy, like James Bond sounding cover of, you know, Anarchy in the UK.
Excellent.
And it's the happiest version of that song, and it makes me happy to hear it. So those are the two that come to the front of my mind.
I'm definitely going to have to look for that one. That sounds awesome. All right, Joshua.
I think it is, yeah.
No, that would be stealing. Joshua, are you back?
I'm back, and I think, can you hear me?
Oh, we can, yes. Did you have time to think about it?
Yeah, well, no, that wasn't... it's actually an interesting question, because even though I have this bias against live covers, there's the song that I've always wished there was a produced version out there and that is so good that I listen to it and long for it is Sean Colvin's version of Only Living Boy in New York. Mm. And even though it's live, I've heard her do it live too, and it's just gorgeous. And to be honest, that's like my theoretical best cover, because in my mind, there's this produced version that's even better than the live version, even though in some ways that can't be done. For real things that I can actually listen to on a regular basis, I'd have to go with Eva Cassidy's version of American Tune. We'll go with another Paul Simon song.
Wow, that's good. Both of them really good choices.
Oh, and to follow up, it's the Raincoats version of Lola that I said should be on the list. I mean, not that I necessarily think that's one of the best cover songs ever, but I just feel like that was definitely, like, the first time I heard that song. I think that was early enough in my love of music, and, like, I think that was one of the first covers that I heard and thought, holy crap, they really... You know, because when you're younger and you're getting into different kinds of music, to hear, you know, something that you've heard a million times done in that way.
Right.
And that's kind of why I keep doing what I do, because I think, you know, not everybody's as old as I am, and not everybody's, you know, had the same experiences. So even the newer stuff that does that, that is really tired to me,
uh-huh,
could excite somebody else. So that's, you know, why I think keep posting stuff that, you know, maybe people would be like, but you say you don't like that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, but I know that there are all kinds of people reading. So I try to give a little bit of, you know, except for people who really, really, really want death metal stuff, I'm not getting into that because there's just too much.
Yeah,
people are always sending me death metal covers. Like if it's death metal band one covering death metal band two, and I've never heard of either of them, I'm not interested. But
well, you know how much it's funny. I never get any death metal covers, and I'll bet Curtis doesn't either. I wonder why that happens.
No death metal covers of Kiss the Girl.
Not
I'm sure
yet.
There are.
Yeah, there probably is. Not through my channels, though.
So one last question here, and then we'll end this thing. But Queen is coming out with their first studio album, and you really got to call him Queen with Paul Rodgers, because you can't really just call him Queen. But Bad Company Queen is coming out with their first studio album in 13 years in September of this year. And they've announced that they've got a cover song on it, but they haven't announced yet what it is. Anybody want to take a guess? You know, we'll have kind of a little, we'll sink it in stone here, etch it in stone, that we're picking what we think the cover should be or what we think it will be. And then winner gets, who knows, you know, a Kevin Rowland's cover album or something.
God.
We'll start, Curtis, you want to start with this one?
Oh, gosh, I have... I have no idea. I don't know. I have no idea what their sound is going to be like now. Like, I haven't heard them in ages. So, I don't know what their new stuff sounds like to be able to give a good guess of what the cover would be.
Well, no one really knows what their new stuff sounds like, because they've been performing the same Queen stuff in concert for the last 13
well, yeah,
years.
I don't know if I can take a guess at that.
I guess rather than do the round robin thing, I'll just open the floor up. Anyone wanna take a guess?
I got it. It's got to be Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
See, I you say that in joking. I would love to see not just one band, but I'd love to see three or four bands do a cover of that song, each band taking a different section of it and putting in their own style.
Oh, I would take it.
I would think that'd be awesome.
I'm gonna wish the same song that I always wish would be covered by somebody, even though I know that it's not it. And that is the song "The Fall," written by Jeff Lynne on the Xanadu soundtrack. I believe it's the scene where the guy roller skates through the wall and winds up talking to Zeus. Yeah, that's a song I want covered now and by as many people as possible. So get on it, everybody.
Especially Queen.
Especially Queen, right.
That's right. Especially by fake Queen.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just going to guess that they're going to cover something from the Beatles, because everybody does.
God, yeah, let's hope not.
All right, I got it. It's The Great Pretender by The Platters. Do you know Freddie Mercury did
Freddie
a solo
Mercury.
Version of
exactly,
that?
Exactly, yeah. He
okay,
had
yeah, Freddie Mercury.
On Mr. Bad Guy, he did a version of that, yeah.
So, Paul Rodgers with Queen, The Great Pretender.
Excellent.
Ebony and Ivory.
Now, if they're smart, they'll do Axel F or something like that. And...
Wow. You blew my mind.
That's right. All right. Well, I'll go around and thank you guys all for each taking the time to do this. Joshua from Cover Laydown, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, this was great. Thank you, Brian.
Curtis from Covering the Mouse, thank you so much.
No problem. Hope to do it again sometime.
Absolutely. Jamie from Fong Songs. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
Steve from Cover Freak.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And finally, last but not least, Liza from Copyright. Thank you so much for taking
the
time.
Thank you.
Special thanks to Joshua, Curtis, Jamie, Steve, and Liza for their time. I'm going to put up links in the show notes to each of their blogs so you can check them out. And all the music that you heard in tonight's show you'll be able to find in the blog as well, or links to where you can buy it in the blog as well. Coming up Sunday, we have the All Request Show. On Tuesday, it is the Willie Nelson cover story. And then Thursday is the Take Your Child to Work Day. Tristan's going to be joining me for an episode of Coverville, where we play covers of songs from Rock Band. So stick around for that. Until then, this is Brian Abbott saying that just about covers it for tonight. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye. Coverville is a proud member of the Backbeat Media Podcast Network, and bandwidth for Coverville was provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com.